The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Expert advice to keep the whole family healthy at All Care, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand.
Now, 5 on 5 5 1 Ray at RTE.ie. The Boys in Green is on the telly tonight, 9:35. And as you would expect, it's a documentary, well, one of two documentaries about the Republic of Ireland's success, starting in 1988 and carrying on through Italia 90 and USA 94, and then when it went all a bit pear-shaped. And the two documentaries are directed by Ross Whittaker, who joins us in studio. Good afternoon, Ross.
Good afternoon, Ray.
How are you?
I'm great, thank you very much.
I loved it because it's sort of a focused, I know you're going to hate this reference, but it's a focused reeling in the ears. There was so much footage, wasn't there, around it?
I have never seen an archive like it. Like, you just kind of, I don't know if there's anything like it out there. When you think about it, RTE would have been, and I know you had some involvement in this yourself at one of the points, but, you know, every newscast would have had footage from the team trainings. Then there was people following them with cameras left, right and centre. So there's actually a huge archive, and distilling that down has a little bit of a reeling in the ears feel. But then the other side of it is, from a 30-year gap, we can kind of analyse it with interviews and that kind of thing.
And that's what that's the difference there, is that you have people like Eamon Dunphy and Ronnie Whelan and even Gary Lineker talking about Ireland's success. So he was there in Euro 88.
Well, one of the things, one of the things about that era was we played England about 6 or 7 times, and that kind of interaction with them became part of the story of the Charlton era. I mean, he'd wanted to be the England manager and hadn't even been given an interview. So when he became Irish manager, we didn't realise at the time, but he was coming in with a point to prove. So we played them so many times then that it became part of the story of the Irish team at that time.
So let's, 86 when he got the job.
86 he got the job, that's
so
right,
This is the announcement, a clip from tonight's documentary.
Well, the long drawn out wrangle about the appointment of a coach to the Republic of Ireland soccer team came to a head this week with the news that Jack Charlton was the man for the job.
The Irish team, it was the one I've always looked at. There's some good players over there. It's a job with great possibilities.
And it was.
It was, and what his voice is just so evocative, isn't it? For anyone that kind of lived through it, it's just that voice is just so strong. And obviously he was brought to life amazingly in that Put Him Under Pressure song. Yeah, but even just being able to work with Jack and his words throughout, particularly episode one, is really, really enjoyable,
He must have been a joy to work with. He gave good copy, didn't he?
He was brilliant. And he, you know, anyone that's kind of under 30 doesn't realise that for a period of time he was the most famous man in Ireland and the most loved man in Ireland, and how strange that was for an Englishman at the time. You know, I think somebody said says in the documentary, Lee's Hand, you know, no one really came to Ireland at that time. But you know what I mean? So for him to even just come over to Ireland and do the job was kind of surprising. And then to make such a great success of it.
There was a story that did the rounds, don't know if it's true or not, not featured in the documentary, that when he went down the country to fish and the like, and he went into a restaurant or a pub, he'd pay by cheque. And they'd never cash it because they'd have Jack Charlton's signature, so they'd get it framed and put it up on the wall.
Yeah, he was famously tight with his money, but we didn't want to get into that, no. John Aldridge tells that story. Actually, a few of the lads tell that story. Wait,
John Aldridge is on the line now that you mention him. How are you doing, John?
Yeah, good afternoon, all right.
Ross is here, this is Ray D'Arcy. How tight was Jack Charlton? No, I'm joking, don't take that seriously.
No comment.
Yeah. So Euro 88 then, John, when did you realise that things were changing and that the fortunes for Irish football were going to be different?
Well, we knew in the qualifying stages we had a really good team, great set of players, you know, great camaraderie. We would go through a brick wall for each other and certainly for Jack. So we knew we had a lot of things going for us, but, you know, when Scotland turned up and famously beat Bulgaria and got us through to give us the opportunity to show to the world on centre stage in the Euros, we were very excited. Yeah. You know, the fact that the first game was against England was huge, absolutely massive. You know, everyone expected us to get beat. And, you know, it was the most enjoyable game probably I've ever played in the green shirt. You know, to beat them in Stuttgart 1-0. It was you know, something else. It was, you know, I put it on a par, like as winning at Wembley at a cup final. Yeah. It was that big.
And what was it like for you? Because you obviously, you know, were brought up in England. Did that make it sweeter, do you think?
Yeah.
What were the chats with the...
A lot of people in Liverpool, you know, I've supported Ireland as well as England for years and still do now, believe it or not. So, you know, it was strange because obviously a lot of my friends were split. You know, they didn't know who to win. But so when I come back, like, I got some great banter, you know, and the lads took it in good art. Yeah, it was great.
Yeah. And you feature heavily in the documentary because your two goals versus Malta got us to Italia 90.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, again, you know, Jack was brilliant for me because I was an out-and-out centre-forward goal scorer. And when it came to play for the Republic, Jack told me he wants me to be a runner, a grafter, you know, from the front, hod carrier type of thing. So I thought, well, I'd be honest, I'll still score my goals, but it was quite intense what he had to do without going into details. He had to run the corners and chase down the back fours and the sweepers as such. And when the balls were coming into the box, I was outside the box most of the time. A little bit like Bobby Firmino now for Liverpool.
Yeah.
So it was a different role, and it really got to me because I was gutted whenever I didn't score a goal for any team. And it took me 19 games, which is unheard of. You know, I never went 5 or 6 in my career before that. So that was hard, but Jack stuck with me. And when the press would give me a hard time, you know, and the English press would give everyone a hard time over here, you know, Jack just told him where to get off and he does the right job for the team, you know, and he stuck by me. So the goals in Malta were, you know, took a lot of weight off my shoulders, you know, because it was a huge game. We had to make sure by winning that we qualified. And we did that day 2-0. And it was like a home game, to be fair. Our supporters were absolutely amazing that day, and we all know there's problems getting across with the flights and the fog and such, but they all made it there some later, but it didn't matter because we partied, you know, for the next couple of days.
Yeah, what's, because there's loads of brilliant memories over the two documentaries, so we mentioned already the win against England in 1988, so what else stands out for you, John?
God, I enjoyed every single game, you know. I scored a couple of hat-tricks, which I loved, you know. One against Turkey in particular, it was a left foot, right foot header, you know, perfect hat-trick, which for me personally was lovely. But you know, the Mexico game again, we got beat 2-1, but the goal,
you scored a goal,
know,
yes, yeah, yeah.
Was like a point. It got it up, get us through.
And you had the altercation with the official on the sideline.
Oh yeah, lost the plot yet again there. Yeah,
but so, there was so much passion. There was so much passion there, John. That's, you know. It's...
But I think I'm on the sideline, we're seeing all across the world. But that's the way we were.
Yeah.
That's not just me. The team in general, you know, all the players were for each other. We were so passionate about winning every game and working our socks off for Jack and for the fans, for the country. You know, that ran through the team, and that's what everyone hated playing us. Every team did not want to get drawn in our group, did not want to play, because if you look the way Liverpool have been playing the last couple of years, Jäger pressing, what they call it on the air, but we done that at an early stage.
Jack was ahead of his time. He's ahead of his time.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
yeah, you had to be able to do that or you wouldn't be in the team. You know, so Jack was the first one that come up with that pressing game.
John, you'll get to see it. It's a great watch and it'll bring back loads of fond memories for you, I'm sure.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, and thanks for taking our call, John Aldridge. Thank you very
pleasure.
Much.
Pleasure. All the best. Bye. Take care.
Ross, this is different because you did the Katie Taylor documentary.
Yeah.
And you did the Shane Lowry documentary.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's funny, I was thinking about that because there's something that attracted to me to all of those ones in particular, and actually Loose Horse Sport Productions, they were the ones that asked me to do this particular one, whereas the others were kind of off my own bat. But all of them were kind of moments where the country stopped. Do you know? And it's funny when you think about it, what are the sports stories that cross over and that everyone wants to see? And with Katie, obviously, you know, the Olympics and her entire story, what she did for women's sport, it means more than just the story of what she did. And the same with Shane, in a way, the way the background that he came from, the GAA, not coming from a place that played golf. His dad hated golf. It was my favourite line in that documentary. I hated golf, you know, and then with this Italian 90, it really was as much about the country changing as the team doing well, like that early 90 period.
And of course, George Hamilton is in it, and the line of that tournament goes to him, and he describes why he said it, because he's there and he realised that everybody in the country is going to be watching now. This is David O'Leary stepping up to take the penalty against Romania.
The nation holds its breath. Yes, we're there!
There's loads of music, loads of music.
Loads of music from the time. It is a bit reeling in the ears in that respect. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, how much fun it was to go back and just pick out music from the late 80s and early 90s that felt like they went with those moments. Like that, it's really enjoyable to kind of go back there.
I remember reading the results of a survey and people were asked about, you know, a moment in Irish history which was pivotal. And a lot of people said Italia 90. That before that, we were one thing, and after that, we were this small, confident nation that felt we could take on anybody. In looking back at the archive, did that come across?
I think that's actually kind of the story of this episode one, really, is that if you think of the 1980s, you think of, you know, the church, you think of emigration, you think of non-stop recession, and then you get to Italia 90, and what do you think of? You just think of people waving flags and going around and being in green, and the whole kind of Europe, of the world, looking at us differently. One of the interviewees refers to, you know, English broadsheets writing articles about how great the Irish fans were. And of course, we loved that as well. We loved being talked about in this way. And I definitely think it was part of a change of mentality in Ireland. And I mean, Ireland was obviously changing already, even Riverdance, you know, and then Mary Robinson being elected. It just felt like there were dominoes falling all around us all the time. And to me, like that kind of first few years of the 90s is a pivotal time in Irish history. So it's enjoyable to go back and make a documentary about that, but then with all that brilliant football archive as well.
And an Englishman, a big strapping Englishman in the middle of it all.
Yeah, and we loved, and it's funny, I think he started off the job with one thing in mind, that was kind of to prove himself. But then within a few years, he'd sort of fallen in love with Ireland. And every time he was asked about, you know, have you got a message for the Irish fans? He's like, I hope they're getting on well back home. And you know, when there was a riot in Lanzarote, and he says, that doesn't happen here in Ireland. You know, like, so he started referring to Ireland kind of as home, in his own way.
And of course, I mentioned earlier on, he fished a lot, and your grandfather.
Yeah, it's funny.
Go on, tell us that story.
Yeah, Keith Duggan interviewed me nicely for the Irish Times earlier today, and it kind of just came up. I didn't really intend for it to, but my granddad was a big fisherman. He's kind of well-known civil servant as well, T.K. Whisker.
A bit more than well-known civil servant. An architect of the state,
exactly. Well, he used to fish down in Mayo as well, and I remember him telling me just coming across Jack Charlton, I think it wasn't long after Italia 90, and just being completely starstruck. You know, he had been in meetings with people like Charles de Gaulle over the years and stuff like that, but Jack Charlton was kind of the one that he was amazed to bump into. And it's funny, after telling that story, I was like, God, I hope I had that right. But then a couple of my cousins texted me over the weekend, said, oh, he was always bumping into Jack Charlton. He loved him, you know?
Oh, did he? Yeah.
So it speaks to, I suppose, the level of fame or respect that he had at that time.
Yeah. And this one is all good, all positive, upwards and upwards. And then next week, it's sort of...
Well, Tony Cascarino has a great line in his book. I was trying to get him to say it in the interview, but he wouldn't say it, which was like, nothing in football ends well, you know? And I think, in a funny way, what's great about doing this series is it's nice to remind people of the brilliant times under Jack, because I do think the last year, everything after kind of USA 94, it unraveled.
Yeah.
And it didn't end on a brilliant note, as it often doesn't.
Yeah. So tonight, 9:35, the first part of The Boys in Green. It's well worth a watch. Highly recommended from here. You'll have a big smile on your face and you might be even jumping up and down off the sofa. I know we've seen it all before and we know how it ends, but still, the heart rate increases. Yeah. Ross Whittaker, congratulations on it, and thanks very much for coming in to talk to us.